If you would, please open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 15. Matthew 15. As today is Mother's Day, that's the direction I'd like us to focus our minds on. And in spite of the fact that this lesson is directed towards mothers, really, it would apply to fathers equally. You have here in Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 through 28, an account of a woman and her deep concern for her daughter. Now, you have a similar situation to this. This is a Canaanite woman, basically a pagan woman who is coming to Christ because of concerns for her daughter. We also have an account of a Jewish man who has a similar situation that comes to Christ to help his demon-possessed son. And so that the things in here are definitely applicable to fathers, but we see specifics here that are really... I guess you could say that they concern mothers more so, that the attributes that this woman has are common to all mothers. Oh, I shouldn't say that. They are common to all good mothers. We'll say that. I'm sure many of you all are familiar with the saying that. Home is where the heart is. When I was in the Navy, I heard it said a little bit more succinctly, especially when speaking about young, unattached servicemen, that home is where mom is. And really, that was the truth, that no matter where you were stationed or no matter where you were deployed, it was, when you referenced home, it was, home was where mom is, because that was, you say that home is where the heart is, that it was the same thing, that was what drew these young men back home. That's where they went to seek the one thing that mothers are best at giving, comfort. That's what really that mothers provide. More than just about anything, we talk about mothers and nurturing their kids. It's that nurturing, that comfort that they provide. Even these young servicemen, that's what made them think about home. It was that comfort that was provided there, especially by their mothers. Yeah, I remember growing up that. When I wanted to be comforted, and I was specifically thinking about several instances, especially when I was a child growing up in Pearsall, that when I, especially at night, when I got sick or when I had a bad dream in the middle of the night, it was mom that I called out to. It wasn't my dad; it was mom. You know, if mom hadn't have been there, honestly, I don't even know if I'd have called out to my dad at all. I don't know if it had done any good. But that if I wasn't feeling good or if I had a nightmare, I'd call for mom. What? I wanted comfort. That's what mothers intrinsically provide. We have here a woman that she wants the very best for her daughter. She wants comfort for her daughter. She wants healing for her daughter. She wants her daughter to be saved. I want you to read with me here, starting in verse 21 of Matthew chapter 15, about this mother. Here it reads, "Then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came out of that region and cried out to him, saying, 'Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed.' But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, 'Send her away, for she cries out after us.' But he answered and said, 'I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel.' Then she came and worshipped him, saying, 'Lord, help me.' But he answered and said, "It is not good that to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." And she said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from the master's table." Then Jesus answered and said to her, "O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire." And her daughter was healed from that very moment. Now, there are a lot of different things that we can draw out of this incident. And we can see, especially here, a lesson being taught. And really, more for his disciples than anything having to do with this particular woman. Here is an example to his disciples of faith, of a great faith. A faith that is beyond what many in Israel actually have. That she breaks beyond the barriers of race and of even religion. This is a pagan woman, and she forsakes her pagan religion, and she goes to Christ as the source of healing, the only place that she knows that she can go to get what she desires. And she goes there because of her daughter. This woman was very persistent, and she was persistent because her child was involved. She was going to do what was best for her daughter, despite the obstacles, despite the fact that she was of a different race, she was of a different religion. She put that away. And the thing is, those cultural things, those are hard to overcome. Many people, we grow up with whatever our culture is, religion that is practiced by our parents. That's what we know. That's what we're comfortable with, and that's where we want to stay in that. I'm comfortable with people that look like me, that act like me, that believe like me. That's what makes me the most comfortable, and I'm not alone in that. Most people are like that. We want to stay in our little demographics, our little niches that we find ourselves in, because that's what makes us comfortable. Again, home is where mom is. Those things that we're used to, those things that we are familiar with, those things are what's comfortable. This woman forsook that for the sake of her child. And she persisted, despite the fact that Christ showed reluctance at first. He ignored her. He wasn't going to give her what he said, "This, I came to help the children of Israel." That's not her. But she continued on. Now, there's a lot that we could go in and we could look at Christ's reasoning for that, and we could debate back and forth a little bit, but I don't want to focus on that. That's save that for another lesson, but the point that I want us to consider here is this mother's persistence. She knew Christ had the answer. She knew that he had cast out demons from other people. She knew he had the ability to do so. So she was going to go to him specifically. Do you think this woman probably went to any pagan healers or doctors or practitioners of whatever to help her daughter? I'm sure she probably did. I'm sure she probably exhausted all of her resources to get what she wanted before she came to Christ. You remember the woman we're told with the issue of blood, that she had spent her last dime on doctors trying to heal herself, and at last resort she said, "Okay, Christ has the answer." She, just touching the hem of his garment, healed her. Well, here you have a woman in the same position. She was going to do whatever it took. Following Christ is what it took. In Luke chapter 18, we have an account of another woman who was very persistent. Here, she's trying to get justice from what we're told is an unjust judge. Christ is telling this parable. Luke 18, starting verse 1, it says, "Then he spoke a parable to them, that the men always ought to pray and not lose heart, saying, there was a certain city judge who did not fear God nor regard men. Now there was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, get justice for me from my adversary. And he would not for a while. But afterward he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor regard men, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest her continuing coming she weary me." Here you have a woman that is persistent in her pursuit of justice. And Christ is telling this parable comparing an unjust judge to God. He's saying, look, if this unjust judge, because of the widow's persistence, will give her justice, how much more so will God, who is just, who is loving, give us what we need, what we desire? Just so you have this woman with her daughter, her demon-possessed child. She's persistent. She's going to do what it takes to take care of her child. It's interesting that Autumn and I drove through Gatesville yesterday, that we wanted to run into Waco and pick up a few things. And on our way out on the other side of Gatesville on 84, you have ball fields over to your left when you're going out. And it's amazing when they have some Little League games out there. Hundreds and hundreds of cars parked out there for those Little League games. Now, there's nothing wrong with Little League. There's nothing wrong with any of these sports like this. But it always amazes me when I see the absolute devotion that parents have for their children's Little League teams. I might be wrong. My thought is many of these parents are living vicariously through their kids and the success of their kids. Now, as a parent, I want my kids to succeed, and they haven't gotten to that age yet. And talking to my brother, you know, he said that when you know Brady was in Little Dribblers or playing all that stuff, he wasn't going to be one of those parents that gets up out of the stands and yells at their kid. I'm not going to be like that. And he was exactly like that. And he said, you know, it's hard to control yourself. And I'm sure if and when it gets to that point, I'll be the same way. It'll be hard to control myself. I want my kid to do the best. And I want to pursue the best for both of my children. And I can see these parents, you know, and when I've gone and when we were in Fort Worth, we had several parents with young men that played Little League, and we'd go out and we would watch those young men. And it was amazing to me, the absolute devotion, the persistence that these parents had in going out and making sure their kids had the very best equipment, that they had the best practice that they could afford and that time could afford. And you know what? It was amazing that the time that those parents found for their kids to not only practice but play, no matter the obstacle, even if God got in the way, they were persistent. Parents will go to great lengths to provide their kids for what they think is best for their kids, no matter what it is. But what is truly best for a child? Here you have had a woman that she truly had a problem. Her daughter suffered in a way that we probably can't even imagine. She was persistent, but she pursued the correct answer. She pursued Christ because she knew Christ was ultimately the thing that her child needed. Not only that, look down a little bit further. Read with me again, starting in verse 24. Speaking of Christ, it says, "But he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then she came and worshipped him and said, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, It is not good that I should take away the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. And she said, Yes, Lord, but even little dogs eat crumbs from which it fall from the master's table." You see, here she did something that is very hard for anyone to do. I've spoken about this recently, especially on our Wednesday night classes, as we're looking at chapter 4 of James. She humbled herself. She humbled herself. That is extremely hard to do. And again, I want you to consider where this woman is coming from. This is a pagan woman that she's not a Jew. She's coming from a totally different religion, a totally different culture. But she humbles herself before Christ. Again, why is she humbling herself? What causes her to be willing to do this? Her child. Her care, her concern for her child. She's willing to humble herself before Christ, a man she really doesn't know, a man that is of a different culture, a different, really you could say a different race from her. But that doesn't matter. She knows one thing. This man can help. This man can help. So what does she do? She comes before him. After being rejected at first, it says that she came and she worshiped him. That the word for worship there, and like there are several different Greek words for love that we find in the New Testament, there's also several different words in the original Greek for worship. This particular word in the Greek, it's proskuneo. It means to prostrate oneself. Literally, the word means to kiss the ground. She prostrated herself in front of Christ. She fell down on her face before Christ, humbled herself for the sake of her child. Now, we have Christ confronting another woman, a similar background to this woman, that not a whole lot different. That if you'll remember, in John chapter 4, Christ confronts a Samaritan woman. Now, the Samaritans were a little bit different than this Canaanite woman. The Canaanite woman didn't have anything to do with the Jews at all. The Samaritans were half-breeds. They were a mixture of Canaanite or whatever other race of people that the Babylonians and the Assyrians and whoever else conquered had brought in. And it mixed in with the Jews that were left there. The Jews despised. They absolutely hated the Samaritans because they weren't pure. They were mixed. And they hated that. And really, their view for them wasn't any much different than their view of Gentiles overall. You read in the New Testament and the conflicts that were brought up even in the Lord's church that had to do with the Jewish Christians and the Gentiles. There was a lot of resistance. Peter even got in trouble because of this. But this is how the Jews viewed the Canaanites, viewed the Gentiles, those that were outside of God's chosen people. You think that Canaanite woman knew this? You think she knew how the Jews felt about her? Absolutely she did. John chapter 4, verse 9, when Christ confronted the woman at the well, the Samaritan, she says, "How do you, being a Jew, ask me for a drink, a Samaritan woman?" She knew. She knew how the Jews felt about her. I guarantee this Canaanite woman knew the same thing. But she humbled herself before Christ. See, she didn't let the things of this world, those cultural things, those things that made her comfortable, she forsook those things for her child. She wanted what was best for her child. She put her family first. You see, she recognized something. She recognized something about Christ that so many people don't. She recognized that Christ was special. So much more so than anything this life can provide. Her family, her culture, her race, her religion, those things that she was used to, those things that she was comfortable with, she saw Christ and she said, "This is different. This is special. This is what I need. This is what my child needs." James chapter 4, verse 10, we're told, "Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and He will lift you up." She was persistent in her pursuit of Christ for the sake of her child. She was humble before Him. Not only that, we see ultimately the culmination of this, of her attitude, of her seeking out Christ in verse 28. After she has done these things, it says, "Then Christ answered and said, 'O woman, great is your faith. Let it be as you desire.'" And we're told her daughter was healed from that very hour. Because of her faith, and really because she showed faith even more so than most of the Jews did, Christ granted her request. So, well, okay, does that mean then that if I go and I am diligent in my pursuit of Christ, that if I pray to God through Christ that my family member might be healed or this hardship might be alleviated, that it will happen? No, not necessarily. And Really, I want you to stop and think about this. If it was the case that every time we went to God in prayer that we fervently asked God to heal a sickness, an ailment, a hurt, or whatever it might be, that God would grant that, how many people would be faithful to God merely because of that? Or only because of that? If all you had to do was be a Christian to get relief from sickness for yourself, for a family member, how many Christians do you think would be in this world today? There wouldn't be other religions. There wouldn't. If all we had to do to be free from any kind of a suffering or ailment would be to pray to God and He would automatically give it to us, you think there would be any other religions? Of course not. Everybody would be, put it, you know, air quotes, faithful to God. But that would be the only reason why. Not because they loved Him. Not because they desired to be faithful, but merely because of what He could do for them. You see, you remember the Jews asking Christ for a sign. Well, just give us a sign and we'll believe. That's what they wanted. Well, just perform this miracle before us and we'll believe you if you do this. Give us what we want and we'll believe you. It wasn't the case. Faith does not necessarily automatically mean that we will be healed. It doesn't. Probably for the most part, in most cases, that's not going to be the case. James chapter 5, though, verse 16, when speaking of healing sickness, it does say the effective fervent prayer of the righteous man avails much. I'm not saying that we should not pray for our needs and our wants. We ought to. We definitely should, and it is effective. But it doesn't necessitate a cure, especially an instant cure like most of us desire. We need to remember the context in which this was written. This was in the age of the miraculous. And we have to understand and remember the reasons for miracles. This here was a miracle to help show, to help prove who Christ was. And really a lesson for His disciples, His Jewish disciples, about what true faith was. And ultimately a lesson for us as well. But also we have to remember, and as we apply this lesson to ourselves, and we think that of what this mother did for her daughter in saving her from this demon possession, we realize that this isn't going to apply directly to us, that because there are no miracles, there are also no demon possessions, and I'm very thankful for that. But we also have to remember, just because a parent desires something for their child, salvation. Because what Christian parent would not desire salvation for their child? That doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's going to happen. Revelation chapter 20, verse 13, it says, "And the sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead that were in them, and they were judged, each one according to his work." No matter what the child does, the child cannot save the parent. No matter what the parent does, the parent cannot save the child. There can be an influence, and I've seen it go both ways, where the parents have influenced the child for good. I've also seen it where the parents have influenced the child for evil. But I also have a very good friend of mine that when he came to know Christ, after he was baptized as a young man, I think he was about 16 years old, because of his influence, not only his parents, but his sisters, his entire family were brought to Christ. That doesn't mean that's necessarily going to happen. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, when Paul is speaking to the Corinthians about the marriage relationship, in verse 6, Paul warns the Corinthians. He says, "For how do you know, O wife, whether you can save your husband? Or how do you know, O husband, whether you can save your wife?" even that close, the closest of relationships, that of a husband and wife, doesn't necessarily mean that I can influence my wife, or she can influence me for the best as far as me being a faithful Christian. If in that relationship that we can't automatically influence the person to be faithful, surely as a parent or a sibling or any other relationship doesn't mean I'm going to be able to influence them for the best. But I ought to use my influence for the best. And yes, as a parent, that's the greatest influence that I'm going to have in my child's life. So much more so than the teachers at school or even their friends. I'm the one they spend the time around. And it's my obligation as a parent to do everything I can, understanding that they're going to make their own decisions eventually. But I am going to be accountable for what I do as a parent. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5. Here, Paul, speaking about Timothy, he says that he remembers when, he says in verse 5, the genuine faith that is in you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and then in your mother Eunice, and I am also persuaded that's in you. Here he says there's three generations that this genuine faith has been passed down first. First it was a grandmother that passed her faith on to her daughter. Her daughter made it her own. And then through the influence of those two women, it was passed on to Timothy. They taught him. They were an example to him. And Paul says, I believe that it is a genuine faith that was in you, that was passed down because of the influence from your mother and your grandmother. And we know that he didn't have the ideal situation where his father was faithful as well. His father was, he was a Gentile, he was a Greek. But you had these two women that showed their care and concern for their son and grandson and did everything they could to teach him, to encourage him, to be that example to him in the best way possible. Here you had the same thing back in Matthew chapter 15 with this Canaanite woman. Wanted the very best thing possible for her child. Ultimately, to provide that comfort that a mother can. And she did. She did whatever it took to make sure that her daughter was healed, to save her daughter from this demon possession. And she did that. And she was successful in doing it. Just as today, mothers have the same opportunity to be that influence, to pursue Christ for their children, to show the children what it means to do that, to go in pursuit of what is truly important, to humble ourselves before Christ, to have that faith that is so very powerful. This woman, this mother, this parent, because these things apply to mothers and fathers alike, that we can have such a great impact on our children. We ought to. We have to remember first and foremost that I ought to pursue Christ. I ought to pursue God for myself if I want my child to. But as we look back at this woman, not only did she provide comfort, caring for her child then, but she still does for us 2,000 years later. We still speak and preach about this woman and the example that she has for us, the example that she is for all mothers, for each one of us as Christians as well. Hopefully that we are as parents like she is. And not only as parents, but as Christians, pursuing the best for each one, using our influence as best we can to bring others to Christ, showing that care, that concern to provide comfort for a lost and dying world. I want to offer the invitation at this time. For those that are our subject, I want us to remember what it means to be what it means to be a parent. For those of you that are grandparents, great-grandparents, I want to thank you, especially you mothers, grandmothers, so on and so forth, for the comfort that you provide, because you ladies still provide that for me. I still seek after that. I'm still a mama's boy, and I always will be. And for that, I'm truly grateful. And the great deal of support that you give me and others of this congregation, the men, we literally couldn't do it without you. And we're very grateful, and I would encourage you, continue to be that way. Continue to teach your daughters, your granddaughters. Be that comfort that the church so desperately needs. If you have a need, if there's anything that we can help you with, encourage you, prayers of the congregation, whatever it might be, we want to help you, encourage you in the best way possible. If you have a need, we ask that you please come as we stand and sing the song of invitation.